Everybody should ensure their mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent. And the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business that it refers to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. Members should remember the microphones work as a queuing system. If your microphone is lit red, you have precedence. Flashing green is next in the queue, and then solid green. Please do not press your microphone button again when it is lit up red, as you will lose your place in the queue. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments that they make throughout the meeting. These are all very welcome to the special council meeting tonight with the Northern Ireland Housing Executive. We have a presentation on the housing investment plan, and on the top table beside me, we've got Gráinne Long, the Chief Executive of the Northern Ireland Housing Executive, John McCartan, over in the back row here, the South Regional Manager, Claire Craney, the South Down Area Manager, second to me right, Sinead Collins, the Head of Place Shaping South, three to me right, and then Andy Kennedy, the Assistant Director of the Asset Strategy, who's again at the back row there. So we're going to take the presentation and then we'll open up for answers or questions and answers, and we'll take three councillors in a row as we've done in previous meetings. So hand over to yourself, Gráinne, for the presentation. Oh yeah, sorry. Apologies that I didn't take apologies. Any apologies from the floor?
Yeah, so we have councillors Brennan, Campbell, Devlin, Finn, O'Brien, Larkin, Lisa Ouchner, Lewis, Murphy, Sinead, sorry, Selena Murphy, Garvin and Taylor.
Okay, any additional apologies than other than was called out?
Yeah, councillor McAvoy, Hyle and McGuinness.
Yeah.
Murphy? Declan Murphy as well.
Yeah, everyone content? We have apologies covered.
Sorry, I'm not sure you said Councillor
Lee Sargent
and Councillor Young.
We did, well. Yeah. Okay. Any declarations of interest? No. Yeah. Gráinne, over to yourself for the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Chair, and thank you, Councillors, for your time this evening. And this is actually the first of the 11 Housing Investment Plan presentations that we provide across all council areas at this time of year. So I think summer is truly over when we start our housing investment plan presentation. What I want to cover over the next 10 minutes, and then we'll have plenty of time for questions, is, I suppose, first of all, the scale and the level of investment that the Housing Executive will make, has made in the last year and intends to make this year. And then, I suppose, some of the more strategic issues and the kind of challenges that we're facing locally and that you're facing. My fantastic team and colleagues are here and have been introduced already, but we're obviously available to you for questions for as long as you like after the presentation. So if I just, I suppose, kick off by reiterating our role as a community planning partner locally, and that's not moving forward. Sorry, am I not pointing it in the right direction, perhaps? Don't mind, apologies. I'll just keep going just in the interest of time and we'll see what happens. So, as I say, Housing Executive is a statutory community planning partner of yours, and we work collectively, and we're very grateful to all of you, to officers in the council. Thank you for the work that we do. And fundamentally, from our point of view, our priority, of course, is meeting housing need and ensuring that we are meeting that need in a number of ways. And I'll go through that in the presentation. But fundamentally, thank you, that our role is to work alongside you in the last year. There's been a number of really important steps that have been taken collectively, ourselves, yourselves and other partners. The 2019, the Housing Action Plan, which was developed in 2019, a really important plan, and was reviewed by the Housing Needs Working Group. And we chair that, the Housing Executive chairs that. And the updated plan then will look back at what's been achieved, but most importantly also looks at ways in which we will meet housing need in the area in the forthcoming years. And that plan was approved by the Strategic Partnership Board back in June, and it'll be published later in the year. And that is a critical document now in enabling us collectively to add to supply and get supply to the levels that we need. And a number of really important projects, I think, have happened as a result of that. I think it's fair to say that there is there are housing outputs that quite simply wouldn't have been in place had it not been for that working group and for that partnership. So we really, really appreciate that partnership. And no doubt it will continue well into the future. Just as the slides come back up, I mean, I suppose it's worth reminding everyone of our role as in the Housing Executive. We are the Strategic Housing Authority for Northern Ireland. So we undertake housing needs assessment. So we measure housing need, and we do that in a fair way and in a well understood way. And we also then undertake site identification studies to identify both land and sites that could be made available for housing. And we do that as the statutory authority. We have a number of other roles then. We commission new build social housing. So again, we don't build social housing ourselves. We commission housing associations to do that. And we do that on the basis of need and on the basis of land availability and on the basis of subsidy and capital subsidy. And I will return to that theme a number of times this evening, because that relationship between land availability, the availability and the capacity of our housing associations and the availability of capital subsidy is really what's constraining supply across a number of council areas. And the dynamics there are really important. And I think we will continue to be challenged by those dynamics this year and in the years to come. So in terms of the overall breakdown and the tenure breakdown, we have our role, as I say, as the Strategic Housing Authority, but also as a very large public landlord. We're still the largest public landlord on these islands. And so our role is to ensure that it's not just that we commission new build, but we also manage 5,164 social homes locally. So you will know Claire and you'll know the team locally because of our role as a landlord. And that, I suppose, balances. And you can see there the breakdown between owner occupation, which is just under 70% of all homes, social rented sector at just over 10%, and within that, housing executive and housing association properties, and then a growing and has been a growing private rented sector. And that balance of those three impacts on everything. So our ability, for example, to provide and to access temporary accommodation is impacted, for example, by the amount of private rented sector stock that's available. And you all know that as well as I do, because you're kind of living and breathing this, given the level of housing demand locally. So if I just start then by going through in the last financial year what the level of housing executive spend has been in this council area, and it's just over 65 million. So that's the scale of housing investment. It's why housing is so important, and it has such an impact on the lives of the people that we serve. And so if I just give you a kind of a general breakdown of that, a huge chunk of that 65 million is housing benefit. And that is a really important subsidy. That is a subsidy for people in social housing who need subsidy and who need assistance and support to meet their housing costs. But it's not just for social housing. It's also obviously to assist people in the private rented sector. And then you look at the other areas of spend. Obviously, as a landlord, our planned maintenance programme, the adaptations that we undertake for persons with a disability, the grounds maintenance work and our response maintenance work. And that is a very, very significant investment by us as a landlord. But as we always say, it's rent that pays for services. So that work is funded from tenants' rent, and we hold that in the landlord account in our landlord reserve. We don't spend it on anything else. When tenants pay their rent, it's our job to ensure that we spend that rent in the right way. We also then receive grant from the Department for Communities, which we spend on their behalf in a number of areas. Private sector grants, supporting people, which many of you will be aware, that's housing support services for people who need them. Our affordable warmth programme, which you'd be very well aware of. And then there's a number of other smaller relative to this, but really, really important areas of investment. Our tenancy sustainment work, which is really, really successful here locally in this council area in partnership with yourselves. A growing amount of spend on temporary accommodation, given the level of homelessness that we've seen. And obviously our community development work, which is hugely important. And hugely important that we continue to do that work and that we continue to find the money to invest in that. But obviously, and I imagine and expect, and I'll be saying this in every council, that the focus on new build is hugely important because of the level and the nature of housing need everywhere. And it is in every and across every council area. I think housing demand, as you all know, because I've been in this chamber for a number of years, continues to rise. And so what we've seen in the last year is a relatively healthy programme in that we have 528 new social homes under construction at the end of March of this year. However, you will see that in 23-24, only 97 new social homes were completed. So that is having a material impact on our waiting lists, on our ability to meet demand. And there's a number of reasons for that. And I mentioned already that I suppose that relationship between the capacity of housing associations, their ability to attract land and to be able to purchase land in order to build social housing, and also the capital subsidy that's coming forward. And the real challenge, I think, for associations in the last year has been being able to identify those sites and also compete in the marketplace in what is a very, 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 in this local area, in this local council area, and what is a very difficult market, land market. And I think that's you're seeing that come through in terms of the numbers on new build. So that will continue to tax us for, I imagine, for some time. And the people who are most impacted by that are people on the waiting list. But as I say, I don't want to downplay what is also and what has been a very successful partnership between the Housing Executive and Council in ensuring that there are more than 500 homes under construction as we speak. And that is to everyone's credit and the credit of officers as well, given your role as a planning authority. I also wanted to touch on the fact that Housing for All, which is shared housing, continues to play a really, really important part in ensuring a growing number of new build homes in the local area. You'll see within this council area there are 9 Housing for All schemes that have been completed, and there are 3 potential schemes coming forward at pre-allocation stage. So that is good news, and we continue to support that and continue to make the case for additional capital subsidy. But I suppose the story, which all of you are aware, is the story of waiting list trends, which we have seen the total number of applicants for the waiting list increasing. Really importantly, the number of applicants in housing stress, so at more than 30 points, increasing over the last number of years, and further increased last year. And I suppose, and this tells the story of why demand is so great, the number of new allocations continues to be far too small. And that really is because there is not enough churn. So first of all, the Housing Executive has not built for 26 years, so we're not adding to new supply. Housing associations have already given you the numbers, are doing their best in terms of keeping pace with numbers. But when you don't have a churn, and once people are allocated tenancies, they are staying in those tenancies, that explains why our allocations are as low as they are. And so that is the challenge that is ahead of all of us, particularly ahead of us in terms of bringing forward new build and also making the case for subsidy. And I suppose if I just take you through what that means and what the numbers tell us, and the Housing Executive has for over 50 years, it has been our role to ensure that we have a well understood and a very open and accessible approach to how we measure housing need and how we assess the number of homes that are needed. We need in this council area 2,234 housing units over the next 5 years. That is a huge figure. And the gross number of new social housing units that are programmed in that period is currently 388. As new sites become available, we will, of course, be adding to that program, and we must continue to do that. But when you look at, for example, the performance in the last 5 years, you'll see that we have not been collectively meeting that target. So the number of starts in the last 5 years versus the number of starts that were needed over the last 5 years versus the number of starts that were achieved shows that we have resulted in 575 fewer starts against the target. And that is a target that is a community planning partnership target. So we will commission what we can as a housing executive, and we will make the case for subsidy for that programme. But clearly there is a very, very significant shortfall, particularly in relation to rural housing. And that number of 455, we need to significantly close down. And as I say, the numbers that will be felt by those on the waiting list, of course. I just wanted, before I finish, talk about, and Chair, I'm conscious of time, and I want to leave plenty of time for questions, the projected spend for this year of 28 million. This is always a difficult slide to put together, because what we don't include in this slide is the number that we expect we will spend on new build. We can't do that until the year is closed out. We also don't have over £38 million worth of housing benefit spend in here, because we're currently transitioning from housing benefit to universal credit. You'll all be aware of that. So we don't routinely include that spend in this slide. So I don't want you to be too concerned that what was a £67 million slide previously is now reduced down to 28. We simply are not able to put the figures in until we've achieved them. What's important, I suppose, from a landlord point of view, is we are increasing our investment in our existing stock. So that number of 10 million has gone up from 7 million last year. And we want to see a very healthy delivery programme this year. And that has been aided by the fact that we have benefited from a rental increase this year. So as I say, we spend rent on services to our tenants. When we have sufficient rent, we're able to continue to invest. So our planned maintenance programme will grow as a result. We will continue to see some of the challenges associated with delivery that we've seen over the last number of years in terms of increased inflation and the ability of our contractors to deliver. We're still seeing some contractors, poor performance across some contractors, and we can touch on some of that in terms of what we're doing to impact on that. But nevertheless, a healthy programme across our own stock, which I'm really pleased to see, and that's something that we've been committed to. We are struggling, I have to say, and it's not unique to us as a landlord, in terms of attracting contractors who want to undertake adaptations for people with disabilities. And that continues to be a very significant challenge, not just for us, but across the piece. And again, happy to take questions on what we're doing in response to that. But I suppose just before I finish my second last slide, some of the challenges, and I don't think I'm going to be telling you anything that you don't already know, given your case files and your constituency work. The number of placements in temporary accommodation has continued to really exercise the team locally. Everything that we are doing is fundamentally about, first of all, ensuring that we have temporary accommodation to provide and that is the highest quality that we can make it. So we are actively out there in the market making sure that we are able to lease high quality temporary accommodation. Where we cannot, we will use what we call non-standard or hotel accommodation. We will only do that in exceptional circumstances. The team will be very, very clear that we will only do that for very short periods. We have an internal target not to place children in hotel accommodation. And if we have to do that, it's in extreme circumstances and for the shortest periods we can make it. So that continues to be an area of extreme focus for us, and rightly so. I've already touched on the number of applicants on the waiting list. Happy to take any questions on that, or indeed on allocations. I suppose it's worth saying you see allocations going up when you have a new build programme, when you have a healthy new build programme. And so as we see bigger schemes coming forward, that will allow us to allocate and reduce the waiting list. My colleague Andy is here to talk and answer questions in relation to our stock investment requirement. Like any landlord with an ageing stock, we have a very, very big investment requirement in our stock. And so over the next 30 years in this council area, we need to spend north of 630 million. And that is a 2021 figure. We expect that to be higher given the level of inflation in the last number of years. So you could add somewhere between 10 and 15% onto that figure. Well, that sounds very negative. It is also investment in housing and it's investment in public good. So it is really important that we do that. And it's also investment in our local contractors and local industry. So, you know, landlords are at their best when they're investing in their homes, and that's what we want to get on and do. I do have real concerns about our budget this year, and particularly the budget on the Strategic Housing Authority side. So we have a reduced budget and a significantly reduced budget for the Affordable Warmth Scheme. We will not be able to approve the number of affordable warmth grants that we would like to this year. And you will hear about that, and you'll hear about it in the next number of weeks and months when households come to you to ask you about it. So I have to be very honest and open with you. We have not received the budget that we bid for on that side. And we have also not received the budget that we bid for on the new build programme. And so that will significantly continue to impact on that point that I made around you must have capital subsidy to commission new build programme. In terms of some of the opportunities, because I'd like to finish on an optimistic note and what are obviously very challenging times. I mean, fundamentally, what we would like to do is to commission retrofit of our existing stock at scale. We want our tenants to be living in safe, warm and dry homes. And we've just finished a really important retrofit programme, which was, you know, Northern Ireland wide. And we would have loved to be able to continue that. We didn't have the budget from the Northern Ireland Executive to fund that. So we've commenced ourselves as a landlord a low carbon heating programme, which is between 300 and 400 homes. And the take up, I have to say, has been very positive, both by local contractors. rooms in 26 years. I want to be rolling that out across all councils. So just to be very clear, Marie, I'm sure you will want to, and every other chief executive will want new build housing executive properties in their council. And that certainly would be our commitment if we're able to. So if we can expand that pilot with the department's agreement, we would want to go beyond those six homes. And I suppose there's a number of other areas that I'm happy to talk about. But I suppose fundamentally, our focus has to be on new supply. It is really worrying to me that we don't have the investment that we need in order to continue to commission housing associations. We wanted, we bid for funding for 2,000 homes across Northern Ireland this year. We will have received funding, we think, for just about 600 homes. So that will have a really significant impact on the waiting list. And I suppose if you're going to ask me what does that mean for this council area, those programmes or schemes that were in the pipeline and could have been commissioned last year, were almost commissioned, are most likely those that we will go ahead with. And we will have to prioritise those that are most likely to be able to go ahead in this year. We will require additional funding from housing associations through disposal proceeds fund. So we will see a significantly reduced programme this year. So I'm afraid I'm not coming to you with good news on the new build side, but look, very happy to take questions. And just finish by thanking all of you and officers in the council for your partnership, because I think it's a very strong one, and I think we're going to continue.
Very much, Grainne, for your presentation. And as you say, your colleagues will be coming in to answer some of the questions that we'll be getting from members across the chamber. So as I said at the start of the meeting, I'm going to take councillors in three at a time. So if we can take a note of the questions at the top table, and then whoever is the strongest for answering it, I can answer after the three councillors. So any questions from the floor? Councillor McAdear.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Thank you, Grainne, for your presentation. I suppose you did say that you used the word dismal, and it's not all entirely your fault, but looking at the situation, I suppose, are you saying that the system is basically broken in terms of the rising need and what actually government is actually doing about it? So I would suppose at our level here, we're looking at what is the solution and what's the easiest solution, and how can council help going on? And I'm just looking there at, you know, the rising rural need. And I see in your report, talk about our local area plan, the development of it, and do we need to do a lot of work with housing executive and the others in terms of doing something actually about this and doing something meaningful that will take a lot of the issues, especially in rural areas, in, you know, where we have rural schools closing because there's nobody living in the areas, and there's a need at the same time. So do we need to really be very clever, think very proactively in terms of what we're doing with our area plan? I'm just looking at some of the figures. You have 80 million less, I think, the figures from 2023, where you spent 1.13 billion this year, projected 820 million. So was that a shortfall in terms of just the accountancy details, or was that the cut that you had in your budget? So that's a couple of questions I had, really. But solutions, really, where we're going to go on this. Sorry, the other question I had, yes, was about your new build. You said for the first time, I think it is, in 24 years, in 2023, you started to build, you built six houses, completed in 24. The extra house that you spoke about just a moment ago, are they what you're expecting to do this year, or is that you, the House Executive, alone, or is it the House Associations?
Thanks, Declan. So we've noted those three questions. I'm going to take in Councillor Bersey and then Councillor Finnegan and go to.
My question is in relation to the restoration of this Wrigley Martin Memorial clock owned by the Housing Executive. I know you've personally been involved in this issue, and I thank you for your correspondences over the years with myself and our DUP MLAs and working with us to apply for the levelling up funding. No, it was unsuccessful, and there's ongoing work with the community to find alternative approaches. So can I just take this opportunity while you're in the district to continue to urge you to seek funding streams to save this important heritage? I know the Housing Executive isn't in a position to fund it themselves fully, but can I just ask if it would either ever be a possibility that you'd be in a position to make a contribution at all to this project, should it ever take place? And on a positive note, can I just commend the Housing Executive support for the recent Sriggley's recent 200th anniversary festival and the involvement of the Community Engagement Officer there. Thank you.
Councillor Bosie, Councillor Finnegan.
Thank you.
So I suppose the first one is more of a comment than a question. The target of 400 homes originally, now 600 homes, is just, it is abysmal. I have to agree. And that is the budget that has come from the NI Executive. I think we can't get away from the point. And I think I stressed in Housing Council many, many times that this is as a result of a decade of Conservative government from Britain that has underfunded us. And we can't get away from that point. And I mean, I think the target originally was 2,000 homes, give or take, if there was legalities around it and planning issues. But that is the target. So I think that's a huge fall whenever we see it in terms of those numbers. Second question is, and I know I've put this forward a number of times as well, just in terms of cross-border initiative. So we have spoke about land availability today and also about temporary housing. And look, I think we could do a lot of cross-border initiatives working collaboratively with the Southern government. And I'm wondering, you know, just in terms of the land availability and how little that we have, if we had, and I'm only taking this, I don't want to be parochial, but taking as an example of South Armagh, where it borders the County Louth and County Monaghan, that if there was land availability there, that we could work with the Irish government. And in terms of temporary housing, we know all too well, working with the Housing Executive and constituents every day, that temporary housing is so far away. So again, taking South Armagh as an example, and I know there's plenty of areas, but if we see people going to the likes of Belfast, Lisburn, and wherever else, we should be looking at those options in Monaghan and Louth and everywhere else that is borders those southern borders. Can we work collaboratively? I do believe that there is funding for that. I can't think of the name of it right now, but I will come back to you with it. But is that something that we're looking at, or is it a plan for the future? Lastly, I had another one. I can't remember what it was. Oh, yes, sorry. There was just one other thing, just in terms of for abandonment issues and homes. I see we do have a duty of care of those who are on the waiting list, and there it is growing. And what I would ask is, what is the procedure there in terms of empty homes? It seems to be that there was lots of it. A couple of years ago, it seems that there's less now, that the Housing Executive are not, I feel, are not on the ground checking for abandonment homes, for homes that could become available for those who are on the housing list. And just lastly, I want to thank the Housing Executive, because I think they used to do amazing work. I think we all, I speak for everybody here, whenever it's only a phone call away. And I think that lifting the phone nature is really, really good. And thanks a million for everything.
Yeah, thanks, Councillor Finnegan. Yeah, we're going to go to yourselves to answer those questions. First of all, from Councillor McIntyre on the rising need in the rural areas, the solution.
Yes, thank
you. Cuts in the budget and new build question.
Sure. Yes, and I'll probably touch on Councillor McIntyre and Councillor Finnegan's questions in my response to both. And I'm sure Sinead will want to come in on some of this as well. There's no simple answer to this, and there couldn't ever be, because housing is really complicated. But you do need three things to work at once when you have the kind of sustainable levels of supply. You need land, and you need that land to be available, and you need it to be affordable. You need delivery capacity. So in other words, the right delivery model, who's going to do the actual building. And then you need subsidy, because social housing is subsidised housing. So subsidised housing requires subsidy. And what is subsidy? It's government grant, it's got capital subsidy. Okay. Now, it can come in many forms, and sometimes land can be used, so you can use public land very well. And I suppose I don't want to give the impression that the system is broken, because I don't believe the system is broken, because I think if we say the system is broken, it suggests that there are no solutions, and it kind of allows anybody who wants to get off the hook to get off the hook. And I think there are solutions. And in fact, you know, there are lots of solutions that have been delivered in this council area. And I think the kind of partnership that we have, our two organisations, and that has been shown through the working groups and through community planning. There is no question in my mind that there are homes in that programme right now that are being constructed right now that would not have been constructed had we not partnered for the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And I think community planning, the local development plan work, has made a material difference. But the kind of solutions that work is when we have public land working really, really well alongside private land. But when I look across other councils, I see public land being used really well, and I see public land being used really well here. But I do think more generally we need, and I'm not talking about in this council area, I'm talking about across Northern Ireland, we need a more strategic approach to how public land is used. It needs to be brought forward more quickly. The kind of constraints on bringing forward public land need to be looked at. And so there are lots of solutions in relation to using public land more effectively for housing. On the delivery capacity side, there's no question that housing associations have played a hugely important role. But I say this in every council area, and this is not meant as a criticism at all to housing associations, because we couldn't do it without them. But the housing executive does not direct housing associations to build. We produce a commissioning prospectus and we say, here's where need is. If you're interested, go and find land in that area. But we cannot direct them. And so I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't say, use your public authority, use your public landlord more effectively. So we haven't built for 26 years. And I would like the housing executive to be in a position whereby we could step in areas where housing associations have traditionally not built. And I think we're not a million miles from that, but I think that is one of the solutions. It's not the panacea. And so, you know, we need to get to a position whereby the housing executive is building alongside housing associations, not replacing them, because we need both to do really, really well and do that more effectively. And the third solution is, of course, using subsidy more effectively, so using land as subsidy, but also, and to come back to Councillor Finnegan's point, that 2,000 number was the total number across Northern Ireland that we bid to the department, to the Northern Ireland Executive, but to the department to say, if we receive the funding, we think there's enough delivery capacity, there's enough land in the system for this year. And so that bid was not fully funded. That bid was met up, you know, that bid will probably give us about 600 homes across all 11 councils. But that's not the number of homes that need to be built in this council area. And so the document that's in front of you sets out the number of homes over a 5-year period. So I hope that answers your question. But I don't want to give the impression that there aren't solutions. There are lots of solutions. But I think we need the kind of strategic approach that this council is taking alongside us to say, look, we know what need is. We know what we need to do to meet it. But land is key. And I think public land is going to have to play a much bigger, much, much bigger role. And when you look at where we're keeping the numbers up, it's areas where public land is being used really effectively. So I hope I've answered that question. I should have also said, you know, I think the numbers absolutely speak for themselves. We collectively are not doing what we need to do on rural housing. And I think we need, you know, we are going to have to be much more interventionist in how we use public land in rural areas. We're not, you can't consistently not meet targets like that and say that we don't have to look systemically at this. We need a systemic focus on rural housing in relation to that. I think, Sinead, if I hand over you for anything that I've forgotten or not said or not gotten right, please do.
So as Grania said, you know, this is a predominantly rural council area, and there's an unmet need for additional social housing units across all rural settlements in Newry, Morne and Down, but the need is particularly high in Castlewellan, Bessbrook, Crossgar, Crossmaglen, Saintfield, Rostrever, Killyleagh, Hilltown. And we're just not seeing the proposals coming through or the site availability coming through for those settlements to help address that need. Over the next 5 years, there's a total requirement for 876 additional new social homes across rural Newry, Morne and Down. That accounts for about 39% of all need for this council area. We have one rural scheme on site at the minute in Camlagh. And the 3-year programme includes 12 schemes with a total of 183 units, which we see as hugely positive, should the funding become available to deliver that programme over the next 3 years. But generally speaking, housing associations experience difficulty in securing sites in those rural areas. As Grania has said, the difficulty in securing land where need is highest. And this is largely due to competition from the private sector. You know, an area is considered to be desirable and often favourable for second homes and holiday lots. There's also limited land remaining within designated settlement limits, and planning restrictions can be a real issue, not just because of areas of outstanding natural beauty and LLPAs, but much of remaining housing executive land is constrained by PPS 8. We had an application refused just last month, and there's another one being presented for refusal this month, which is disappointing. And you know, we're not going to deliver two houses that are needed. We do work closely with housing associations and put together a programme of site identification studies to encourage housing association activity. Whilst we can't lead their programme, we can encourage them by identifying sites and areas of unmet need. We've carried out studies for Rostrever, Warren Point, Fessbrook, and we have one ready for Newcastle. And actually, a site identification study in Fort Kill was really successful, and we had two schemes as a result of that. But we do also work really closely with the LDP team to help shape a future affordable housing policy and a rural housing policy for inclusion in the draft plan strategy. As well as that, we'll continue to promote the need for land to be zoned for social housing to help address need over the next 15 years.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to answer Councillor Bowsey's question. And look, I mean, we're very happy to continue to look at opportunities and funding opportunities that are there. We're not, unfortunately, in a position whereby we can fund this or make a contribution ourselves. And I suppose that's because we are effectively two organisations in terms of how we are funded. The first one is the Strategic Housing Authority. So we spend government grants and we don't spend any other type of grant. So we wouldn't be in a position because we're not funded from the Department of Communities to do that. And the second is the landlord. So we would be making a contribution using tenant rent. And I think, you know, we have to obviously prioritise all of those other areas. But we're very happy, and we have done, as you know, I'm very happy to partner with you and seek opportunities. We won't stop doing that. Yes.
Okay, and the last two, and I will take the three speakers to come in if they want to come back and some of the answers are given before I go on to the next speakers. We had the cross-border initiative and then abandonment issues from Councillor Finnegan.
Yes, so on abandonment issues,
we've got well-documented policies and procedures around abandonment. Yeah, we have well-documented policies and procedures, and I think we do have a bit of a backlog from the COVID years where obviously our patch managers weren't out on the ground as often as they would ordinarily have been following up on those. So we are now working through that backlog in terms of getting and making sure that the properties, if they are abandoned, and we would encourage you all, if you're aware of anything in your local areas, to get in touch with the relevant patch manager. He'll go out and do an inspection and we'll go through a process in terms of what notices they have to serve to try and get those properties back into stock. There's a well-worked legal framework there in terms of returning those properties back into stock. All reports of abandonment really seriously try and get those in. Obviously very keen to try and meet any of the unmet needs that's out there as quickly as we possibly can. So, if any, please.
Thank you, Claire. Yeah, and then just the last point that was brought up on the cross-border initiative or temporary housing.
Yeah, so financial transactions capital, I think, was that what you were talking about in relation to it? So, I suppose from our point of view, we will identify any funding opportunity that is out there. That would add to subsidy for new supply we will look at, but we have to look at it within our legal virus. Okay, so at the moment, the primary way of commissioning new build social housing is through departmental grant, Department for Communities. Within that, there are a number of other opportunities. So I mentioned earlier, housing associations have essentially recycled capital grant within their system. We will look at ways in which we maximise that. We will also look at ways in which financial transactions. And that's currently being looked at by a small number of organisations that we work in partnership with who provide temporary accommodation. So they are seeking, and it is very small numbers, but it's important because it might be a new model that we can scale up whereby these are voluntary community sector partners of ours, where they will access that capital and they will use that to add to their temporary accommodation supply, essentially. And some of those voluntary community sector organisations work locally. So I think Simon Community is one of them and others. So I think they're the two kind of additional funding sources that might be available. We can't go beyond that unless we're asked to do that by the department. But I suppose we're always happy to talk to anybody who has either ideas for or thinks there are other ways to fund.
Yeah, thanks, Grainne. Councillors McIntyre, Finnegan and Bowsey, is there anything you need to come back to after getting the responses from the people here at the top table? I'm just conscious that we do ask questions in lots of three. You get some information and then don't have the chance to reply. So I'm going to give
I'm reasonably happy right now because it's a massive subject. I would love to have more time to talk to someone.
If you're content yet.
Yeah.
Callum, your question was answered. Yeah, Councillor Andrews.
And attend, welcome back. Nice to see you back here again. And I'd like to thank you very much for your presentation. It was very much in depth and there's plenty of food for thought there, you know, looking through the whole report and all. And one of the strands that did like, and to, I've gathered the housing executive have got the powers back again to build housing, to build and replace housing stock that a lot of it was sold off whenever Mrs. Thatcher brought in the right to buy back in the early 1980s. And I do support the points that my colleague has made about the rural communities. What can we do, you know, to enhance rural communities and put life back into them there? You know, and again, whenever you talk about land banks and all as well, you know, there's a lot of councils would have had D1 notices out. And maybe at the time that those notices were issued that there was no interest or whatever, but maybe through the whatever councils, you know, you're talking about land banks, maybe you could revisit those and to see if there's anything that's on the list that would be suitable or ideal for housing needs. And also, you know, constituents in Rowan spoke to me about, you know, that they would like to downsize from the houses that they're in at the minute to smaller, like, you know, fold type accommodation. And I'm wondering would the housing executive and in conjunction with the housing associations maybe work towards a sort of sheltered accommodation provision in the likes of Rowallan, you know, that for people who want to downsize that live many years in the houses, it would free up a whole lot of stock, you know, that would free up for families, for people the first time, you know, to setting up home or whatever. But that's just some of the ideas that I have. And then I suppose it would be remiss if I didn't mention Shrigley. And I don't know, my colleague, Councillor Bowes, has touched upon the point. I would like to thank our housing officer who's worked with the group and the housing executive from Downpatrick. And maybe if there's any support that the housing executive could provide in addition to other organisations. I know Shrigley, it's a village. There's over 200 houses and families and all. And maybe, you know, what we picked up from Shrigley was the likes of a hub or a centre, you know, for the village that could be a home for them, you know, to meet all ages and backgrounds and stuff. And I do welcome your support and hopefully in relation to the clock. I know I've made representations and other councillors and MLAs have done the same. But again, I just thought whenever you were with us that, you know, we would mention Shrigley to you. I know that we've raised it with you before and we do look forward to working with you in the future, both the long-term for the clock and also for the likes of a community hub or facility in Shrigley as well. So thanks for listening. I'll hand back to you.
Yeah. Terry. Nobody else looking to come in at the minute, so I'm just going to go back to yourself, Grania, just some points that Terry raised.
Yes, very happy to. And again, colleagues, please come in. So I think just on new building, I think it's important to say the six new homes that we're very, very excited about and are a game changer, we hope, are a pilot. So we haven't formally had our powers changed yet. OK, so the pilot is essentially is to do two things. It's a demonstrator. It allows us to demonstrate that passive house, so kind of ultra low energy housing, can be delivered using modern methods of construction. And so in order to do that, first of all, we have to submit a business case to the department. The department, very grateful to them, are funding, are enabling us to fund this. And obviously, comes back to my point about subsidy. The reason it was possible to do it was we contributed the land. So it's housing executive land. So in identifying the site, we had to find a site that was small, perfectly formed, wasn't going to cost a lot in terms of remediation costs. And so there's a whole range of factors we had to take into account, and that left us with a very small number, one of which is in Sunningdale and Belfast. So the kind of powers that we need to be changed will be the ability for us to borrow, for that borrow not to count as kind of general Northern Ireland borrowing, Northern Ireland public borrowing. And so that's the process that we're engaged with currently. The minister, when he came into post, has committed to that. And I'm very grateful that that process continues and is making progress. Will I be sitting in front of you this time next year being able to say? I don't know, I have to say. But that would be a nice problem to have, to be in a position whereby you're putting pressure on me, asking me where are the homes you said I said I'd build. I suppose just to go back to that point around land and land banking, I mean, one of the things that we're very pleased about is the housing executive have been approved by the department to take forward some land assembly, very small scale, but again, I hope a sign of things to come whereby we will be able to acquire lands
that may be difficult for others to acquire with a view to new build, to commissioning new build. And that is us dipping our toe, I suppose, in land assembly, which we'd like to be able to do at scale. And so I think you've probably heard enough from me on the point about land and powers that we feel we need. And I think if we had those, that would go some way. I don't know if other colleagues want to cover anything else on those two points, or indeed on the point around downsizing and work that we're doing. I have to say, just in principle, anything that would enable us to partner with another landlord to add to supply and make better use of stock, we will certainly look at. The fundamental review of allocations, which is underway, is a really, really important opportunity now for us in terms of how we allocate and how we ensure, I suppose, better use of stock. That is ongoing, and that will certainly, and I'm very happy to talk about that another time. So there are a number of options, I think, available for that. But I think you raise a really important point about making best use of the stock that you have.
There's no other comments on. Yeah, go ahead, Sinead.
Just add, you know, of the 528 units of on site in the district, at the minute there's a huge number of smaller units, small unit accommodation, apartments, and category one apartments for older people, which we hope will help people to downsize, you know, give that option for people on the waiting list or to transfer into smaller homes. We do have a supporting people program, but the emphasis is more on a floating support model rather than accommodation type. But we respond to the needs of the waiting list, and we very much work with our housing association colleagues to facilitate and promote a mix of houses that reflects the needs of the waiting list. And we're always open to have that, to take that conversation further.
Thanks for that, Sinead. Any other questions on the floor? You're content enough, Terry? Yeah?
I'm happy enough.
Councillor Payne.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks very much for the presentation and for answering our questions. I suppose, a bit like Declan, the thing that jumped out at me the most is the very, very big gulf between supply and demand in terms of housing stock. And I know that a couple of years ago in 2020, there was an announcement, a ministerial announcement on partial mutualisation of the housing executive. So I suppose my question is in two parts. Where is that, the implementation of that announcement, sitting now? And to what extent, in your opinion, would that go towards bridging the gap between supply and demand? Thanks.
Brilliant. Anybody else in at the minute? That's... nobody else to come in at the minute, so Grania, just go back to you on that.
Yes, Councillor Payne. So again, yes, that statement was made by Carly Cooley, Minister at the time, and followed up. She was at the time standing in for Minister Hargey. And so that statement was a very important statement because it commenced a piece of work whereby we looked at, and it was led by the Department for Communities, but very much in partnership with us, not onto us, but with us, which we were very pleased and grateful for, and that we would look at, I suppose, first of all, what is our long-term investment requirement? So in other words, how much do we need to invest in our stock over a 30-year business plan? And we identified what that would be. We also then looked at how you would fund that, and that would be funded through borrowing from rents, as other landlords do. Part of the reason we don't currently borrow at scale, using our rents to fund our investment and also to fund new build, is because that borrowing counts against Northern Ireland executives, so general government borrowing. And that then constrains us because we sit alongside a whole range of other organisations who want to borrow. And it constrains the level of borrowing. And so for a number of years, the housing executive has not been able to borrow to fund investment in existing stock and to fund new build. After that statement was made, as I say, we worked with the department on finding solutions to that. And I suppose where we're up to now, and I was very pleased that when Mr. Lyons came into post, he continued that and has continued that programme of work. And it has installed, I have to say, since he's come into post, which I think is and I'm very grateful for, because I think we've spoken about the scale and the nature of need and the demand, or the gap between demand and supply, as you said. So in terms of where we're up to, and again, Minister Lyons has spoken about this, it's again very much his intention that that work continues, that the housing executive is freed up to borrow in order to invest in the stock and to add to new supply. What it would require is a change to our powers to enable us to borrow without that counting as general government borrowing, and to enable us to borrow as a public body. And so that's, I suppose, that process continues to be underway. And it very much is his intention that that would happen. It will require a number of steps to be taken. And as I said to previous Councillor Andrews, whether that happens in the next year, I don't know. But it certainly feels like it has the level of political consensus. And so I'm always have to say cautiously optimistic, but certainly cautiously optimistic. I think the fact that we've had that new build, even though it's 6 new homes, that pilot, I think, and a number of other, like the Land Assembly Programme, I think there's a kind of acceptance that, you know, we collectively should use the clout of a very large public landlord. And so I'm cautiously optimistic, and certainly the progress that's been made gives me, you know, I suppose a sense that we will be, you know, in the next few years in a position whereby we will have the additional borrowing in order to build. But it does require, and I have to say it, our rental income to remain at a level that allows, because, I mean, borrowing must be funded by something and it must be funded by rents. But as I always say, we don't spend rental income on anything else other than our own homes and our tenants. Hopefully that gives you reassurance.
Thanks for that. I suppose timelines in the next few years was part of the follow-up that I had. But could I just ask why you're talking about borrowing against rents? Why would the housing executive not be borrowing against the collateral of its stock as opposed to the rents? Because, and I understand that you're saying that you don't want to, you know, crowd out borrowing from other government agencies that might be operating in a similar plane. But could you just clarify that point? You would be borrowing against rent rather than borrowing against the collateral of the stock that you own. I mean, I think you said in your presentation you're the largest landlord in the UK or Ireland, so that I would just appreciate clarification on that. Thanks.
Thank you. So, no, I mean, I suppose it's the same point. We're borrowing against our rental income in the sense that it would be rental income that would pay back that borrowing. But you secure that borrowing against your stock. So, you know, the fact that we have an asset base gives us security. It kind of opens the door to a lender, and in this case, it would be a public lender. If we didn't have 83,000 homes, we wouldn't be in a position to borrow, but it's the rental income that pays back that one.
Okay, thanks, Ronnie. Thanks, Killian. Any other questions from the floor? No, everybody content? Okay, thank you very much for that, Gráinne, Claire, Sinead, Andy and John. Thanks very much for your time this evening. That closes the meeting for this evening. Safe travels home. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cautiously.